So our first presenter of today is Brandon Wiley, who you may unfortunately have not heard of because of his early involvement in Freenet. Brandon was very important in the early involvement in Freenet and has gotten far less proportion of the press than he really deserves for the good work that he did there. So that's how you may not have heard of Brandon. But Brandon is now working on something called Alluvium, which he will be presenting now. So here is Brandon.
All right. This is my presentation. It's just one slide with URLs on it. I was so busy working on the code, I didn't have time to make any slides or anything. All I have is code. So, yeah. So this is it. So, okay, first of all, I'd like to mention why I'm here. I'm here because I'm here from the Foundation for Decentralization Research, which is a nonprofit organization which I started to fund peer-to-peer research projects and to like act as like legal, you know, shield for people working on projects. And so, I'm here in my role as the evangelist for the Foundation for Decentralization Research to show everybody our first, you know, like big demo project thing that we've been working on, which is Alluvium. And so you should check out the website. The website's kind of broken right now because everything's kind of broken right now. But when I'm done with my talk, I'll fix everything. I'll fix the software. I'll fix the website. I'll fix all that stuff. But, you know, there's the URL for you guys. So Alluvium. This is our first project. I wrote it. The idea behind it was, you probably all know that a while back a bunch of online radio stations got shut down because the recording industry decided to have retroactive licensing fees, and it became very expensive to run a radio station. And it's already pretty expensive to run a radio station, internet radio, because, there's a lot of bandwidth involved, and you gotta get the machines, and it's pretty expensive. And so once they had the retroactive licensing fees, that was pretty much it. They went down. And there's been some legislative battling, and some people are back up. And so it's not as bad as it was. But when that happened, I thought, I should fix this problem. I should, because when sites go down, I think there must be a technical solution to this. That's why I got involved with Freenet back in the day. I was like, this website shouldn't be able to shut them down. This is silly. And so with the internet radio, I was like, we should just have some kind of internet radio that'll just be totally awesome. That's what we should do. So basically, I thought, well, peer-to-peer, let's do some peer-to-peer internet radio. And there's already some projects that have peer-to-peer media streaming, and maybe you've heard of them. And they use this model that I really don't like, which is this tree-based relaying model where you relay the stream to a few people, and then they relay the stream to a few people, and they relay the stream to a few people, and then it kind of branches out. And I don't like this model because it still sticks with the whole streaming concept. And streaming, it just seems very silly to me. The idea behind streaming is that you limit the rate at which people can download to the rate at which the media plays back so that people can't really like hog the connection. Like everyone downloads at this set rate and you kind of spread out the bandwidth between people. And I don't like that because it's not really any better in terms of bandwidth utilization than just downloading the files straight up. Like overall, like in the big picture, you use, like you have, if it's a 128 kilobit stream, you do 128 kilobits per second per listener. And if they downloaded it, well, they'd take the same amount of bandwidth. So overall, it all balanced out the same amount of bandwidth. So I wanted a system where you use less bandwidth. And so with the peer-to-peer streaming, my idea is that you can get bandwidth savings by letting the clients download the files from each other rather than from the server when possible. So here's how Alluvium Station works. First of all, you put up a playlist file. It's not like a M3U playlist file. It's a Alluvium playlist file, which is based on the RSS format. It's a little XML file, and it tells you, at this time we're playing this song, and at this time we're playing this song, and et cetera. It's got a list of basically timestamps linked to song URLs. And that's really, at the very minimal, that's all you have to do to run an Alluvium station. You just put up this file, and then people download it, and then they know what, your station is playing. And, it includes the URLs in the file, and so then they download the music from the various places. And it can be distributed. It can be all on your server, or it can be on servers all across the world. Like, you can put links up straight to the people that made the music, straight to their website, and then they can provide the bandwidth. Or you can make a big repository with all your music. Like, for the demo station that we're running this weekend for CodeCon, I put all the files on somebody's computer, and then it's all in one place. And that way you have, it'll be nice and, reliable. So, that already, has some bandwidth savings, because you don't have to personally host all the bandwidth for all the songs. You can spread it up over multiple machines. But in addition to that, we've got this peer-to-peer swarming download technology, which is provided by the Open Content Network. They have a thing called Tornado, which is a swarming download client. And the Open Content Network provides this swarming download service for any kind of freely licensed content. Their idea is to provide it for things like Linux kernels and Linux distributions and open source software and Creative Commons licensed media, movies and books and that sort of thing. And so they provide this service for everybody. And so the way that the swarming download works is that you connect to the Open Content Network gateway, and you're like, hi, I want to get this file. And then it returns a list of, like HTTP headers with some various information, like the hash of the file and a list of other clients you can download the file and all that sort of thing. And then you distribute your file downloads among all the different peers that have the file. You fetch a little bit from this guy, a little bit from this guy, a little bit from this guy, and then a little bit from the server maybe. Like, if nobody has the chunk you need, you get that chunk from the original source. And so the bandwidth savings of this method are, it's hard to tell. People always ask me, okay, so how much bandwidth am I going to save if I use this method of downloading rather than just straight HTTP? And it's hard to tell because it depends on how much bandwidth the various clients have, and how many of them are behind NAT, and how many of them aren't behind NAT. And it depends on, like, how repetitive your content is. Like, every time you have new content, you have to start over with caching on servers and that sort of thing. But it's going to be somewhere between, like, 10% and 90% bandwidth savings. That's basically where we're at, yeah. And so the thing here is, with Alluvium, which Alluvium is basically taking the Open Content Network download model, adding playlists so that instead of just having files and you click and you download them, there's files and they're automatically downloaded and streamed to you, and then, it's like a station. It's like you tune in, and then whatever is the current content, that's what you're exposed to. So the worst case for Alluvium is Icecast. Like, if Alluvium is really doing very bad, it'll be about as bad as Icecast. So it's always going to be better than Icecast. So it's pretty much a win, over Icecast. The downside is that you have to install client-side software, because you have to have the software that, does all the swarming download and everything. And then after it swarm downloads the files, it generates a local Icecast stream, and then you can just put your media player directly to it. It's Icecast compatible. But, you still have to download this extra software. So what we hope to do in the future is to have plugins for all the media players so that you don't even have to care about the fact that you're running this client-side software. Because, you have to have client-side software to play music streams, the codecs and everything. So if you just, include in the plugin something which does all the swarm downloading, then there you go. It's like you click and then everything, works. And so I guess I'll do a little demo before I ramble on, because I'm sure you're all bored without pretty slides to look at. Hopefully this is going to work. I'm just going to click and it's just, no. Okay, I'm sorry, my link is bad. Let me just edit that by hand. I know. Okay, so it's all written in Java. I know that upsets some people, but, if you want to write it in C, go ahead, you know, submit a patch. Okay, but it's very convenient. It launches under Java Web Start, and oh, there we go. It already popped up. There we go. And here's our beautiful demo user interface. Isn't it lovely? This is just the demo. As you notice, there's no way to, like, get all the various stations of the world. There's only two stations here. There's, whoa, popped up twice. That was kind of disturbing. There's freely licensed music, which is, this is just, you know, it's a radio station. It plays music. I just got a whole bunch of stuff off the internet that was in OGG format. I only support OGG at the moment. Maybe someday we'll support MP3, but OGG was just, you know, it had the best, like, Java implementation of an Icecast server that plays OGG. So anyway, I just downloaded a bunch of random OGG files. I got about 10 hours of music, and I used the handy DJing program LS to generate a big playlist. So that's that. And then there's the live CodeCon broadcast, which doesn't quite work. It almost works. It doesn't quite work. That's one thing that people don't, immediately get when I'm talking about Alluvium is that it works for live streams as well as recorded streams. They're like, well, how can they do that with the playlist thing? And what it does is it takes the live stream, it breaks it up into individual files, it puts them on the web server, and then you download them and, you know, like play them. And then, you know, you're thinking, oh, well, that's gonna be, it's gonna be choppy, you know, like in between each file there's gonna be like a little skip. But it doesn't because it caches aggressively. It'll cache, like, up ahead of time. So unlike, like, XMMS or WinAMP or something where you play the file and then it goes to the next file and then it, like, has to fetch that, there's a little pause between, this is, it's smooth and seamless and it just sounds like a live stream. And, you know, it's pretty handy. And, so that's how CodeCon is being streamed right now. So as soon as my talk's over, I'm gonna go fix that and we'll have that live stream up. This little tiny bug. And I see Dan has a question, but I'm going to save it for the question-and-answer session. And then there's some little links here if you want to, like, look at other stuff. Like, there's this link for more art by the girl that did this lovely user interface, and I think you should go check that out because it's very nice. And so let me see. What other fascinating stuff do we have here? Oh, right. So currently we're just using the OCN gateway, because that was simple and it was, they provide that. I'm like, well, we'll go with the Open Content Network gateway. It does all that peer matching stuff for me and I don't have to code that. But obviously once we get, you know, everyone using Icecast to be using this superior technology, there's going to be a whole lot of file downloads. And I asked the Open Content Network people if the gateway could handle it, and they're like, oh, totally, we can handle it. But I think eventually it's going to scale to the point that maybe it can't handle it. And so we've already got all that code for the next level. It's in there. We've got a nice distributed hash table based on Cord. It has a fancy little initial introduction mechanism based on IRC. It's all very neat, catchy stuff. But that's all turned off right now because, you know, it's hard enough to get a demo to work just with the very simple version. But rest assured that we've got all the code already in there so that we can switch to full peer-to-peer, totally decentralized mode. I don't know if it'll work, but I mean, the code, you know, it's there, so we can make it work hopefully sometime. Let's see, what else is there? Okay, and so future plans for what we're going to do once we have this all debugged and everything, and once we've replaced all Icecast with this, and, you know, this actually works. We got a bunch of stations up. So the plan after that is mainly integration with other things. Like, for instance, I think it would be really nifty if you could spider the web or just Google the web or something and get all of the files, you know, the proper format OGG files that are licensed under, like, Creative Commons or some other license which lets you distribute them on the radio. And then radio stations that want new music, they can just sit there and they look in the new stuff bin, and, you know, there's new files there, and they're like, oh, and they listen to them and they put them on the radio station. Because we have this thing with ASCAP and, you know, these various performance licensing agencies, and the reason that they exist, and the reason that if you want to run a radio station you have to give them like a couple hundred dollars every year, all three of them, is that it's too hard to find you know, to get in contact with every artist that you want to play their music, get the license, give them some money, do all of these exchanges. So, you know, there's just these convenience organizations exist, where you give them money and then you're able to play anything out of their catalog. It's that they're not so convenient anymore because there's all these like rules on how you can run your radio station. It's all complicated. You have to pay hundreds of dollars and of dollars, and it's a big pain. So I feel that with the future of, you know, metadata and internet searching, we can combine this sort of thing so that you can scale the ability to find music under the proper license and do the transactions to put it on your radio station. We can do all that automatically at a software level and get rid of all of these, you know, supposedly convenient middlemen and just do it yourself. Thanks. Oh, he likes it. Yay. So we're going to be working with the Creative Commons people to maybe put up a station using all Creative Commons licensed content, because that's kind of the other thing which I'm really interested in, is the fact that the recording industry, or the RIA specifically, own pretty much all the music that I ever hear. I mean, if it's on the radio or if I can get into the store, just anywhere I go, unless it's like some guy in a coffee shop playing his car, they pretty much own everything, which makes it kind of difficult to do anything cool, because like they don't want you distributed and they don't want people to download it, and it's just a big pain. And so I think if we could get some radio stations going that people could listen to, which have all freely licensable music, that would be nice. Because I remember when Audio Galaxy used to be around, it was pretty awesome, and I'd go there and I'd be like, I want to download some music, and they'd be like, oh, that's blocked. They'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know that was copyrighted, never mind. And then it would, you know, recommend a bunch of people who actually paid Audio Galaxy to host their music on Audio Galaxy, and then I would go get that, and it was just as good. Sometimes it was better. I mean, there was some really good music I found that way. And so I feel like, you know, like even the stuff that I just downloaded off the internet, just searching Google, I'm like, oh, look, here's some OGG files, and they don't mind if I download them. That stuff's about as good as the stuff on the radio. I mean, it's not like the best music I've ever heard, but it's totally listenable. So I feel a lot of people, they seem to have this idea that nobody's interested in distributing their music for free. That like they basically, everybody, they want to be a rock star, they want to get signed on a label, and they want to be played on the radio, and that's the American dream. And I feel like the real problem is that it's just too hard to run your own independent station with independent content, and so there just aren't that many people doing it. You got to buy the servers, and you got to have the bandwidth, and it's a big pain. I think if we had some servers, they were, you know, running some stations, I think that people would want the exposure. They'd want to, not everybody, but enough people that you'd have a lot of content. That reminds me of the thing I almost forgot to mention, the other benefit of Alluvium, which is that unlike Icecast and other streaming media things like QuickTime Streaming Server, it doesn't decode the files. So it doesn't take any processing power to run the Alluvium server. I know that when I was running an MP3 server, Icecast server, and downloading and playing MP3s, back on my old computer, I mean, computers are faster now, it kind of took up a lot of bandwidth, you know, and sometimes it takes up a lot of memory, and it's a big pain. Alluvium, all you need server-side is a web server, that's it. In fact, my plan for a cool project is to try to get an Alluvium station running off of a Zaris, because it would work pretty well. In fact, because of the fact that you have to, like, seek back and forth because people are fetching different parts of the file, running off flash memory would maybe even be faster. And Azaris has totally enough processing power to, like, take some files out of flash memory and send them out, you know, through the USB over Ethernet. So I think that, like, it would be pretty handy having a Azaris station. You could just, you know, take out the compact flash card, put in the other one, keep your station running. I think it would be really nice. And so that's the benefit. You know, you can run it off 386. You can just, you know, whatever you have lying around. You don't have to get your computer. Right, no, Java's the client. Server-side, you just needed HTTP server. Yeah, you couldn't really run an Alluvium client so much on, not the current Alluvium client on Azaris, because it takes like 53 megs of memory, so that wouldn't work so well. But that's one of our other projects, is that like in order to write the plugins, you know, to make it work at every media player like automatically, we'll have to write a C version, which will be a lot of work because we have to redo all the Open Content Network, like, crazy swarming download stuff. And so, you know, that's another, another, like, thing that's going to take a lot of work. And that's why you should all donate a dollar to the Foundation for Decentralization Research, because, you know, otherwise we basically won't do all this crazy stuff I'm talking about. And it's not so much that we need the money, it's that we need a whole lot of people, separate individuals, to donate money to the foundation so that we can convince the IRS that we're publicly supported, and that we can get nonprofit status, and that we can get grants from other nonprofit agencies and the government and stuff. So people don't need to donate a lot of money. That's because we don't really need any money. We need, you know, public support. So everybody here should just donate a dollar and have, you know, a friend donate a dollar, and it'd be great. And so that was my pitch. And let's see, do I have any other plans? I have all this time to fill up, so I'm trying to think of the other stuff we're trying to do with you got a question. We got to say that for the question and answer period. I've told that there's two things. What is that? I can't. Oh, you want to see the demo? Yeah, where I actually click on the thing. No. It totally works. I assure you, we've been playing it all week. Oh, it doesn't work on Mac OS X, I've heard, because I hear that iTunes won't play OGG streams. And no one's been able to confirm or deny this, but no one's... there's a plugin. Okay, so install the OGG stream plugin. It plays OGG files, apparently, already. What? Was that saying something? Okay, he might be wrong. I see that I've heard that it plays OGG files, but not OGG streams. And it's too bad, because it really deploys beautifully on OS X. Everything, the Java stuff's already installed. You just, like, click on the link, which the link isn't actually live yet, because, like, I'm showing it to you guys here, and then I'm going to go fix it. And then we're gonna... So anyway, we've been playing it all week. It totally works. The live part doesn't work. The music stream works beautifully. But I haven't had internet access for the last couple days, and my stream expired. I generated a stream which was only like 2 days long, and so it's expired. So I have to go generate a new playlist, I'm sorry, for the next 3 days. And, you know, because it has a set list of songs, and when it runs out of songs, it just stops, because I couldn't think of a more reasonable default behavior. So as soon as my talk's over, I'm gonna put up the new stream, and then you can go to the website, the link will be live, and you can all demo the thing, and put a live mirror of the music here, so that you don't have to use all the outgoing bandwidth, but I don't know if it's up or not. So let's see, other integration, I'll just go to the website here and see about what other fun stuff I can talk about. Distributed hash tables in Chord. Yeah, I did mention briefly that we do have a distributed hash table implementation in Alluvium that we can turn on when we've debugged all of the basic stuff. And it is based on Chord. And I know that everybody likes Kademlia these days. And this is the only conference where I can say Chord and Kademlia, and maybe like a few people in the audience know what I'm... Raise your hand if you've heard of Kademlia. See, that's just hilarious. Wow, okay. Okay, I apparently didn't link to the thing where I talk about the other stuff I'm going to do, so never mind. Music Brains integration would be something we'd be very excited about, you know? That's right. So Creative Commons and Music Brains and Open Content Network, we've got all these projects, we want to take them and tie them all together into kind of some big cool thing. Oh, here's another thing you can do if you're using RIAA-owned content. I think it would be really great if there was, you know, if you're listening to a station and, you know, you listen to it every now and then, it has kind of the same music. You know how the radio is. It kind of plays the same music. It'd be nice if, kind of in the background, it could download higher quality versions of the songs you're listening to. So you start listening to, like, an OGG stream, and then at the end you've got, like a FLAC-encoded, lossless sort of thing. And it eventually, you know, as you listen to the stream, it upgrades to being, like, CD quality audio. I think that would be great. And in fact, if you already have a high quality version on your system, it should just play that rather than playing why even bother spending all the time downloading the low quality version if you already have a high quality version? And of course we need like some Music Brains type of integration in order to get that thing where we know that they're the same song, because, you know, they don't have the same hash, because one's the low quality version, one's the high quality version. So that's something that would be very exciting. Okay, I think we're going to go into the question and answer period now, but we're going to need them to bring the other mic here, because otherwise where is it? Okay, well, somebody that knows where it is, come get it and take it down there. Because, you know, if you don't talk into the mic, then your things won't be recorded into the archive. which we'll be broadcasting later, because it's not broadcasting quite right now.
Ah, the magic touch. Hey, Brandon, what's the latency on the live transmissions?
That's a good question. I think that I can get actually really fast live transmissions. This is an important thing about the Open Content Network Swarm downloading that I forgot to mention, which is that I went to Justin from, you know, like, Open Content Network, and I said, hey, I know that you're probably really busy, but I would be really cool if you could add this feature that would make streaming work better with your downloads, where, because you know you get chunks from different people and you assemble a file out of order. I said, it would be really great if you'd put kind of like a priority on the chunks at the beginning, and then kind of as you go through the file, like, get less priority on that. That way you download the file out of order, but I can start streaming it immediately. And he said, oh yeah, we already do that. So it already does that. So you would think that because of the way it downloads the file, then it plays it, that it would, the latency on the stream, like it would not start immediately, but it starts immediately. It starts just as fast as IceCast. Now on the live stream, currently it lags by 1 minute, and I think that I could make it be pretty much instant because you can feed the sound card output into the AUG encoder and then have people downloading it immediately because if you encode faster than people can download. But it was kind of complicated to set up, so I just have like this pipeline going where it records a minute and then starts recording the next minute while it AUG encodes the last minute, and then it transfers all the stuff out of here over to an external server so that we don't have to eat up all the bandwidth with all the people, you know, like eat up the CodeCon bandwidth. So it lags by 1 minute, but I think that if I put time into it, I can get it to lag by like a couple seconds or something.
Is there a standard for tagging AUG Vorbis files as to their license status, and do you recognize that?
That's an interesting question. As far as I know, there's no standard for putting license directly in the AUG Vorbis files, but that's not what we're going to be looking at anyway. What we're going to be looking at is using the Creative Commons method, which is that there are these RDF metadata files which exist out there on the web, which hopefully you'll be able to search them with Google because they're text and everything. Because, you know, searching AUG files, who knows if that's ever going to come up, but searching RDF files seems probable. And so then the RDF files, oh, there's someone up there with a question. That you come down here and you can ask a question. Oh, it's Sam. He's just saying yay for RDF. Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot to mention that the way that we're going to be snarfing all of this metadata outright is that NeuroGrid has this really handy feature that you point it to a URL and it'll snarf down all the metadata and then put it in this database using the Trustero API. Yeah, this all uses the Trustero API. I should have mentioned that since it's my project. I should have been, like, all flouting it. But anyway, and then we get all the data. We put it in, we have the RDF database, and we have the RDF database, and then we just query it, and we're all like, okay, give me some things. Content type is AUG, and license type is, you know, freely distributable by the Creative Commons terms, and that's the way we're going to do it. And my question for the Creative Commons people, that I was hoping they would show up and we could hang out and talk, but I guess we'll see them at South by Southwest. My question for them is, what we're supposed to do if people go take Eminem songs and then generate Creative Commons licenses saying that they're freely distributable, and then we distribute them, and then we get shut down, and we're all like, hey, we didn't know. It was all automatically snarfed by our little bot, you know, and yes.
The answer for that is that they have the ostrich solution, which means that they don't even care about it. They can't handle it. It's just too difficult to really worry about it. On another note, one of the things I like to do with Music Brains is to actually keep track of artists that have released their music under Open Audio or CC licenses, and then also have download links. So if you're going to use Music Brains to identify your content and to properly tag it, we can also use it to automatically identify works that are available on the net.
Oh, that's good, because another thing we wanted to do was be able to be like, hey, go ahead and download whatever I'm listening to right now because I like it. Because I feel that way all the time. I'm listening to a stream, I'm like, what is this? I need it. I just want to click the I need it button and have it download. So when you said the ostrich method, does that mean that if people release Eminem songs under Creative Content licenses and we play them on our radio station, that we just get shut down? That's the end of the story?
Unfortunately, yeah. Creative Commons has no provision for protecting you.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll rethink that idea about running a radio station. We'll let somebody else do that.
Can't you just use the common carrier status that ISPs have? And I have. ISP doesn't get shut down if somebody publishes a hate website. You won't get shut down if somebody lies about the license of an Eminem song.
That's true for things that are political, but not so much for music. Music is kind of considered to be one of those things that, like, they should just shut you down, because, who cares. If it's political speech, then they kind of like, they're like, I don't know. But music, I mean, it's frivolous, it's for kids. They'll shut us down.
So, getting back to your live streaming solution, say you turn down your live stream files so they were only 2 seconds apart. I think then you'd incur a lot of TCP connects and HTTP overheads, and then you'd also have to add some latency for the OCN to distribute your tiny files. So do you think it would climb above 2 seconds, or am I on track at all?
My solution for doing low latency live streaming, and by the way, I don't think that low latency live streaming is actually that important, because this is for broadcast. It's not for like video conferencing, like direct things where low latency is important. It's not interactive. It's like you broadcast and people listen. But so my solution for low latency streaming isn't to make the chunk size very small of the files. You keep the chunk size as a minute, but what you do is you just make the files available for download before they're finished being generated. And in fact, like, you could have just one big file, and OCN would deal with that great. If you just had one infinitely growing file, well, there's the problem of generating the hash. But generally, if you have a really, really big file, it'll stream it just great. It'll start at the beginning, and it'll get the beginning, and then it'll kind of spread out, but then when you need, like, these next chunks, you know, it'll have them already. So the problem is just making the file available so that people can start downloading it immediately. But now that I think about it, yeah, OCN has to generate a hash of the file so that you know that peers aren't lying to you. And to generate a hash, you do have to have, like, a complete chunk. So I guess my new answer, after I thought about it, is that low-latency streaming is not a priority for the project.
So do you actually see any problem with, for your idea of sort of having the automatic radio station finding stuff in the thing, of just letting there be a central authority for the licenses, and just basically if somebody lies in the central authority, maybe it's just, you know, music brains, then you have an okay legal solution because the lie is there and somebody just has to send them a letter to say, take this down, somebody's lying.
So, okay, so there's two interesting things here. First of all, basically nobody wants to be that guy that's the authority because... Oh, Google. Okay. Second thing is, they'll still shut us down because, and this is just between me and the people in this room, but I have a suspicion. I have a suspicion that what the RIAA really wants is to kind of get rid of the internet radio thing. It's not so much that, like, they're not getting enough money. They just kind of, like, want it to, like, go away because they don't like it so much. So even if there's the central authority and we trusted them and they told us, I think they'll probably just still try to shut us down anyway. The other interesting point that you brought up is that of all my projects, this is the one which has the least anonymity, you know, and like protection for like people. Basically, because all of the files are basically just on a web server, if you want to censor some music, if you want to get it taken down, you can just, you know, do a DMCA takedown notice to the website, and then there you go. Which I actually think is kind of handy, because that makes it's not complicated, it's just like, if you're doing something people don't like, they'll take you down. And then people can go fix that whole DMCA problem, and I think that somebody should work on that.
Question? Maybe I'm ignorant, but I don't know what a swarm download is.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's something I should explain better. So a swarm download is the thing that I've been kind of vaguely talking about, where you want to download a file instead of contacting the web server and just being like, "Hey, web server, give me the file," and you get the file right. You contact a whole bunch of people simultaneously, and you get different parts of the file from different people, and then stitch the file back together. The benefits of this are, first of all, if you have a cable modem and you're downloading from people on dial-up, just to give an example. Downloading from one person on dial-up is painful, but downloading from 10 people on dial-up simultaneously is, that's fine. You know, you're going to saturate your connection. And so that's the first thing with swarming downloads is you can get really fast downloads. And the second thing is, because you're downloading from other people who are also downloading rather than from the server, you can get really, really good bandwidth savings on the server side, which is important. If you look at onionnetworks.com, which are the people that made the Open Content Network stuff, that's like their commercial version, there's some people that are using it right now. Like I think E-Tree or archive.org, they're allowing BitTorrent, and are they still doing BitTorrent downloads, Fran? Yeah.
I need to work on it some more.
Okay. So they got the BitTorrent downloads, that's Bram's swarming thing, and they've got the Tornado downloads, which is the Open Content Network swarming thing. So when you have big files, it's just smart to use swarming download technology instead. And I think that the biggest thing keeping it from working is all the people behind NAT, because they can't accept incoming connections, so they can't really serve files and they can't really contribute bandwidth. So, but that's a separate problem that people are trying to solve. Like, NAT is the enemy of peer-to-peer. So,
okay, we have time for, I will refrain from adding comments here talking about swarming. we have time for like two more questions here.
Please talk a little bit more about distributed hash tables, the two algorithms you method.
Oh, okay,
and
sure.
What is MusicBrainz?
Oh, and MusicBrainz. Okay, well, MusicBrainz, really, the best way to answer this question is find this man right here with the slightly purple hair. Well, somewhat purple hair. I didn't want to say purple because not totally purple. He is MusicBrainz, and so you can ask him all about things. But MusicBrainz is basically a music metadata service. You give it your files. It tells you what they are and what it knows about them. Kind of like CDDB, except CDDB was for CDs, and this is for like just whatever random files you have encoded in crazy things. Now, about distributed hash tables, there's been a lot of work with distributed hash tables recently from MIT and Berkeley, and it's a very exciting realm in peer-to-peer, I think. I think one of the things that we most argue about on IRC is distributed hash tables. And distributed hash tables is basically what we were trying to do with Freenet back in the day, but the technology has gotten so much smarter. I mean, the algorithms are just beautiful. They make me cry. And a distributed hash table is basically, it's a hash table. You give it a key, it gives you back a value. But instead of being like on one server, it's on, you know, N servers, and then everything balances out among the different servers, and you can make it reliable, and there's, oh, it's beautiful. And Chord is a very simple distributed hash table implementation. It's my favorite one because it has all the properties that I like, and it's simple. Kademlia is the one that's all really popular with all the, you know, the P2P hackers. They're all like, Kademlia, because it's got this whole gee whiz, isn't this cool, it's based on exclusive OR, and I love exclusive OR sort of thing. And now, I know that my peer-to-peer hacker friends, they tell me that it's better in some real important ways than Chord, but I haven't gotten around to reading the paper because I was all like, oh, I don't know. Because it's more complicated, and Chord is just really simple, easy to grasp, so. But I promised Zuko that I would read the Kademlia paper, so I'm going to read it on the way back on the plane, and then I'll release my opinion on Chord versus Kademlia, the great debate. I'm really surprised that we haven't had yet, you know, sitting around drinking, the great reputation networks versus distributed hash tables debate. I thought that was, like, the topic of the hour, but apparently not. Did you have a further, like, follow-up little question thing? Something? Okay.
As I understand that your method of indicating the content to the server is basically this list of URLs, and then those go downloaded. Suppose you're doing a live broadcast and someone joins in the middle. Do they have to start at the beginning, or is there way of
this is why
knowing
we,
what's coming?
Yeah, this is why we don't use M3. We don't use U files for our thing. We use this RSS format using all standard RSS tags. RSS is a syndication format where you're all like, here's some articles, you know, that you can read, or you know, like, you know, here's the thing. And so everything is timestamped. So there's a timestamp. And then there's a URL, timestamp URL. And it has some extra metadata in there, but basically it's timestamped URL. So what the Alluvium client does is, when you connect, you iterate through the list of things until you get to the now timestamp, and then you start there, and then you play on from there. So it syncs to the current song. Now, things don't sync like within a few bytes. They sync like within a song, you know, like a file. So like a live stream, for instance, syncs within a minute. So you can have two people listening to the same stream, and they can be off by like, you know, like up to a minute. But it doesn't really matter because, I mean, what's a minute on a live stream? You're just listening to this broadcast. It's already, you know, lagged by a minute. I think it's okay if two people are out of sync by a minute. It would be possible to make it so that you could sync right down to the byte if you included information in the file about, like, what timestamps went to what byte offsets in the file. But because Warbis files are compressed in this variable bitrate nonlinear way, you can't just be all like, you know, 1 second equals however many bytes. You'd have to have this convoluted thing. And it just doesn't seem all that important, basically. And so I guess it's like, if anyone wants to talk to me later, then, you know, come talk to me later about stuff. And that'd be great. Thanks.
Thank you, Brandon.